Welcome to another episode of Cloud Unfiltered. Today, our guest is Sebastian from Trigger Mesh. He's the CEO of Trigger Mesh. Welcome, Sebastian. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Very happy to be here. I'm not the CEO. I'm the co-founder and CTO, VP of engineering, VP product.
We'll just call you Chief Man.
Mark Inkle, my co-founder, is the CEO. He's in the US.
Okay. I apologize for that. I did not know that. I probably should have done more research before I said that.
That's fine.
Yeah. No, but we're very excited to have you here today. You know, you've done a lot within the cloud native space. So we're very excited to talk about all the different things that you've done. And maybe you could give us a little bit of history, how this, you know, particular journey began, just to start off.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I love the history of tech and so on. So this could, you know, this could take a while, but let's try to keep it short. Trigger Mesh, we do cloud native integration, which means that we help enterprise build event driven applications. Okay. So it's all about event management, in the cloud. And really where this started is that late 2016, early 2017, there was a bit of a, you know, not a war, but there was a little bit of tension between people using serverless, especially on AWS with Lambda, and then people containerizing application and using Kubernetes, right? And then some folks were saying, oh, we're going to jump over the entire container, you know, phase, and we're gonna go straight serverless. And that's when I created Kubeless, one of the first FaaS framework, function as a service. And really the goal was to show that if you wanted AWS Lambda-like capability on-premise, you could do it on top of Kubernetes, all right? And then the big kicker, you know, when people think serverless, you know, a lot of people equate this with functions. But really the key that we saw at Trigger Mesh, and that's really the journey we embarked on, is that the key of serverless to us is really eventing. How do you build event-driven applications in the cloud, right? How do you link services together? How do you, you know, trigger execution of workload or functions when specific things happen in your data center or on different SaaS and so on? So that's why we decided to do Trigger Mesh, to help solve that problem.
That's awesome. I mean, so, you know, it brings us back to an interesting point. So let's first of all, for our listeners, let's define what is the difference between, you know, serverless, FaaS, Kubernetes, all these kinds of things. So obviously we start with Kubernetes. That's the base. Well, actually you could argue you start with a VM or even a bare metal first, but What are the different pieces there, just for our listeners?
Yeah, so, you know, originally I come from virtual machine orchestration, so I did a lot of work on running VMs in the data center at large scale. I had the chance to prototype the, you know, one of the first clouds at CERN. You know, they had 500 machines that they were burning, 500 servers, and we started, you know, installing Xen on them, and then finding ways to start, you know, 10,000 VMs and, you know, on all those machines and so on. So anyway, that I really come from, you know, low level infrastructure world. And what happened is that, you know, let's try to speed up history a little bit. But when Docker reinvented containers, right, I think what, you know, even though they made a lot of developers happy, at the beginning, at least, they missed the data center world and the way of, you know, how applications run in the data center. The, you know, the Docker folks didn't really have that DNA, I think, about of, you know, orchestrating things in the data center, managing the apps really in the data center on multiple machines. So that's where Kubernetes really, you know, helped. And that's what I saw very early on, that, you know, Google was pretty much, I mean, they were rewriting their internal system, Borg. They were rewriting it in the open, and they were sharing that with everybody, yeah. Right? So then instead of, you know, now dealing with VMs, you can deal with containers, you can benefit from Kubernetes, which is, you know, a system inspired by, you know, Google and all the lessons that, they've learned, you know, managing containerized application. So now you go up the stack from the infra and the VM. So now you're dealing with containers, you're managing them, orchestrating them. But what are you doing? You're really building apps, right? So you go one level up, and you know, what are people really trying to do? They are trying to deploy apps that are containerized. So now you're talking PaaS, you're talking platform as a service, right? One level up. And when you look at this spectrum of PaaS, you know, you have things like Cloud Foundry, right? And then, you know, if you really, you know, go down that spectrum and you look at apps and you decompose them in very tiny, you know, we call that business logic, you end up with a PaaS that manages little functions. And that's when serverless comes into play. So serverless to me is on the spectrum of PaaS. And when you think about, hey, how do you do serverless in your data center? Well, you know, it's somehow going to run on containers and it's going to be orchestrated by Kubernetes under the hood. And it could run on bare metal or it could run on VM.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So we had Matthias Billman on the other day of Netlify, who you know, he has that whole I forget what stack it is, but he has a stack that's on there. His argument is that the developer really just wants to consume things the easiest way possible. So they don't want to understand the infrastructure. They don't want to understand, you know, everything about that. If they could just consume an API that does something for them, consume an API for a database, consume an API for this, they really don't want it. They want to abstract away everything possible. So that's really where I think FAS comes into play, is that really they don't have to think about everything underneath. So would you agree that developers, you know, are kind of abstracting away more and more of that kind of infrastructure, and that's really where they want to play?
Yeah, you know, I would nuance that a little bit, but it's true that, you know, the less you have to deal with, you know, the better, right? You know, if you are a developer trying to deploy a web app, you don't want to be installing a kernel, right? And yeah. And go up the stack, you know, until you reach managing your app. So if you look at the cloud, when the cloud started, you know, 2005, 2006, or, you know, or so, and we tried to define what is cloud computing, you know, it was really utility computing and then elasticity. Mm-hmm. So this concept that, hey, you want servers, you should be able to just, you know, plug, right? Plug in the wall, you get your server. And if you need more servers, they're just going to show up magically, right? So even the vision of the cloud was exactly this, was I don't care how you provision them, you know, just give me an API where I can get as many servers as I want. I can get as much storage as I want. I can configure my network the way I want, right? Software-defined networking. So it's this idea of, yeah, I don't want to do it. I just want you to provide it to me through an API, right?
Yeah,
infrastructure layer. Now you go one level higher, you start talking PaaS, and you know the people you're dealing with are really developers instead of being sysadmins or operators. If you're trying to, you know, if you talk to developers really of apps, of end user apps, that they don't care whether it's a container or a VM. They just want to deploy. Right? here is my Ruby code, here is my PHP code, here is my whatever code. Deploy it. Keep the runtime secure, scale if I'm requesting more resources, give me more storage if the app needs more storage, you know. Yep. So yeah, I agree. Developers don't want to worry, and they want this magical feeling of serverless. That's why, you know, Lambda has taken off. But it's not really new. That's exactly Heroku. That's exactly App Engine. You know, it's all of those systems.
Do you think that that lack of caring has made like some developers lazy?
I think developers were lazy. I don't think that's anything. I honestly, me as a developer, okay,
I'm phrase more lazy, more lazy.
Yeah, but I think that's, you know, that's if you're a good developer, this is my argument. If you're a good developer, you're going to take advantage of what's out there. That's what developers do. They try and optimize. Throughout things, and they want to get the app as fast as possible.
I like your question, Justin. I think you're right on, and I can I can sense the, you know, somebody who is closer to the infrastructure, maybe. But no, I actually, you know, I agree with you. We have to be extremely, careful because that's what's going on with containers, right? So suddenly there was this amazing UX created by Docker. There was, oh, let me Docker pool this app, right? And let me bundle it, you know, and then add my NPMs on top of it and so on. And then suddenly what do you have? Well, you end up having, you know, proliferation of bunch of container images. You don't know where they come from. You don't know what's in them and things like this. So it has made things much easier. But if you don't have good hygiene,
yep,
you know, it's really not going to help you, right? So you still need to have, you know, continuous scanning. You still need to have, you know, how do you handle, you know, your CV patching of your libraries and whatnot, right? And, you know, the also one of the reasons why developers jumped on Docker is that they felt that they would have more control towards what was going to run in prod, right? And they said, oh, well, you know, just run my container. It was just the same thing when they said, hey, just run my jar, right? And in companies, you had those big silos and people, well, you know, throwing jars, you know, above the wall and run my jar. So now, you know, it's like, hey, here's my container, run it. So I would tend to agree with you, Justin, even though a lot of people are going to, you know, use a stick and beat on us for it. But I think you still have to use the same good practices to make sure that,
absolutely,
you know, you don't have security issues, you follow best practices and so on. Otherwise, you know, yes, it becomes very easy to generate a mess.
So going back to, you know, trigger mesh and eventing, what problem does that solve and how does that help the common person that is obviously using APIs, using containers, using things like this? What do you see the main use cases and why did it come about?
Yeah, so you know, it's exactly what we're talking about. It's, you know, as a dev, you know, what are you trying to do and what is your app going to look like, you know, in the cloud era and then, you know, over the next, you know, 10, 15 years, right? What is an app, you know? And a couple years back, there was this great talk from Patrick Dubois, who is one of the founders of the DevOps movement. And you know, he was giving this talk saying, hey, you know, now when I'm writing an application, it's full of services, right? What he meant by this is that, you know, he's using S3, he's using Comprehend, he's using, you know, BigQuery, you know, maybe different clouds, right? He's picking the best of, you know, all worlds out there, services that come from different, you know, SaaS providers and, you know, your big cloud providers. But then he's having to compose those services. Very much what we were doing when, you know, you folks know Web 2.0, right? Web 2.0 mashups, right? Yahoo pipes and all that, you know, all that stuff, which was great. So that's exactly what devs are doing these days, I think. You know, you write less monolith in Java, and then in the cloud era, you compose cloud services together. And what you may end up having to write, you know, on your own, is going to be, you know, smaller footprint, could even be, you know, a function, right? So the world of devs is serviceful, right? You know, serverless, but serviceful. Yep. And, you know, what do you give to devs to be able to build those serviceful applications? Well, you give them a way to stitch events together, to stitch notifications from cloud services together. And you give that to them through an API, right? So that's what we saw at Trigger Mesh. We're trying to help developers build event-driven applications in the cloud era, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, and I would argue that it's actually a great time for it because right now I think that people are moving more towards the cloud native than to an actual cloud. So people are trying to pick up that style. And really, you know, a new term I actually heard the other day was cloud native data center. And I kind of like that term because, you know, what it means is that we're taking the cloud native, you know, workflow and functionality off of the public cloud and making it available. And I think this is what people want, making it available in the private cloud. Because people really, what we talked about is, they want that ease of use. They want to be able to just consume something by spinning it up. They want the catalogs. They want, you know, they want a base to start with. And you know, me being a developer, you know, in a while back too, I understand that the motivation there. You know, you're trying to get an app out as fast as possible. If you could find an easier way to do it, you're going to naturally migrate to that because it's going to be easier. It's going to make your life easier. So I think that, you know, having something like Trigger Mesh makes sense because now you're this intermediary between public, private, APIs, all these other kinds of things that you might need to work with. Even things like, you know, Kafka buses and queues and all these other kinds of things that we have that we're working with these days. So I think it's actually a great time for something like Trigger Mesh to be around. Because historically, you would go to like some of the open source orchestrators that were out there before, but they weren't necessarily cloud native. They were very, you know, just okay, if this, then that kind of thing that, yep, you know, wasn't really as scalable. So where do you see, you know, I'm getting to the long-winded here.
That's good. That's good. You should come pitch Trigger Mesh to customers with us.
So where do you see the, you know, where do you see all of this moving? Where do you agree with what I'm saying that, you know, people are really want that cloud native type functionality wherever they are and just consume it the same ways?
Yeah. So one big belief with, you know, with Mark, when we started Trigger Mesh is that, you know, even though we are cloud, you know, big cloud guys, big cloud proponents, and, you know, public clouds, and we've seen public clouds come into play. We also believe that most big enterprises, they're going to keep a lot of on-premises systems, you know. So even if, you know, those big companies, they have cloud, public cloud adoption, you know, going on, you know, right now, they're going to keep some on-premise. Could be for, you know, security and audit reasons, compliance reasons, you know, could be for cost reasons, you know, things like this. Could be because of, you know, legacy. You know, there are many different reasons, you know, for, you know, why they're keeping that, right? And, you know, a big bank, a big pharma company, they're not suddenly going to just go 100% in public cloud. So now, you know, you see this hybrid world, right? And by hybrid, we mean that, you know, a big company, they're going to use something like, you know, Salesforce, right? And they're going to send metrics to Datadog, right? Because they recognize Datadog as a great service to store metrics and so on. And maybe, you know, they want to delegate, you know, the management of their Elasticsearch cluster to Elastic, right? And then on premise, they still have some Cisco UCS racks and whatnot, right? So that's the world that they're facing. It's very multi-cloud. It's very hybrid, and that's where we fit in, right? You know, we help people, for example, take events from Salesforce and inject them in their Kafka-based infrastructure. We help PNC Bank with their DevOps governance and the, you know, they take events from everywhere in their build pipeline, and then they trigger, you know, risk analysis on demand, right? So you have this world that's a mix of, you know, cloud services, still a bit of on-prem, and you need to, you know, you need to stitch that together in a way that it doesn't become a ball of spaghetti. That's the big challenge, right? It's not just little glue here and there that's unmanageable. And that's really where we see the strengths of Kubernetes, of Trigger Mesh, sorry, Kubernetes as well, but Trigger Mesh, yeah, is that to make that stitching happening and for that stitching to be manageable, you need a clean API. And if we're, you know, very techie, that's where I said declarative API. And then my, you know, VP of sales, Gary, is, you know, hitting me with a stick because nobody understands declarative API, Sebastian. I'm like, yes, people do. So you need a very clean declarative API where you're going to be able to describe, hey, I got events from Salesforce, put them in Kafka for me. And then if the event has those fields in the metadata, then also stick it in Elasticsearch, for example.
Would you say like Trigger Mesh in many ways abstracts some of the cloud native services like lock-in? And what I mean by that is, you know, we're seeing a lot of customers with this utopian idea of I can put stuff in AWS and then I can just really easily port it to Amazon, I mean to Azure or whatever. And that's not as simple as like that. You're consuming an AWS service, you know, you're consuming Lambda and you want to move that function to Azure Functions or whatever. There is some manipulation there. So do you see, and that might not be the best example in your situation, but do you see customers that are consuming services and leveraging Trigger Mesh to sort of be that bridge between different services, making it more abstracted so they can, you know, make changes if they want to?
So I don't think we have the real use case of, you know, avoiding lock-in. I think, you know, when people say, oh, I need to avoid lock-in, personally, I think that it's a bit of a, you know, marketing fear, you know, mostly. And I personally don't see it, you know, when talking to customers and users at conferences and so on. But what I do see, yes, it's people, you know, maybe using some AWS because S3 is just, you know, everywhere and it's easy. And okay, so fine, you're using S3, but then maybe you want to use an AI, you know, machine learning service that you're running, you know, on-prem, right? And we did, you know, pretty big demo on this right now, right? So People mix and match services, not for lock-in reason, but really much more for ease of convenience, I think.
Yeah, you know? I would agree with that. I mean, I that goes back to what we were talking about. It's just that developers want that ease, you know, whatever's going to make it the easiest to deploy and consistently. And, you know, with the also security is a concern there, obviously. So you want to make sure your APIs are secure, you know, and this is funny that, you know, I've had other talks about this, but you know, in this API world, how do people ensure that all these APIs are maintained and that they're secure and that the whole pipeline through everything? I mean, that's an app in itself that you could probably create is, you know, verifying each of these APIs that you connect to and make sure that they're somehow secure. You know.
Oh, and versioned and everything. Yeah, that's
But it's funny, to go back to what you were talking about before a little bit before, you talked about security versus on-prem versus the cloud. And I always have this conversation and I felt like in the beginning, on-prem was definitely more secure, but I'm kind of at the point now where I almost feel like the cloud, even though people don't think so, is probably at a more secure state, you know, from the beginning than a lot of businesses are in their, you know, on-prem, because a lot of businesses don't have the right people to kind of evaluate that and to create that state. So I kind of feel like cloud, it's turning a little bit. Maybe cloud is a little bit more secure, you know, from the get-go. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just taking a very personal, you know, very personal data point, right? I use Google Drive, you know, for my personal stuff. So, you know, I've been working on a Mac Air for a long time. People are always surprised, but you know, that's what I use. And then, you know, most of my files, I just keep a few files on my desktop, but then most of my files are in my Google Drive and I have this, you know, Google backup, you know, thingy. And I do think that, you know, it's actually much more secure than if I was keeping, you know, even a local backup or something. You know, I actually trust, you know, Google or Dropbox to do a better job at keeping my file secure. I mean, you know, some people are not going to be happy with this, but
I agree. I mean, I think that even from like a EC2 or, you know, from a Kubernetes, you know, you have security policies and VPCs and all these extra layers, you know, network ACLs, you know, you have all these things that you can configure to make it more secure out of the box than you would. You know, obviously you need a little bit of skill set there, but I think even without it, you know, I feel like you're a little bit more secure
I would make the argument, Michael, that that little bit of skill set part is what causes the problems, because then people get lazy and go, well, I'll just allow all, it's not a big deal. And that's where we're with these hacks and things like that.
And you know, that is not new and not specific to the cloud, right? We used to exchange root credentials, you know, and we used to run everything as root. Okay, let's not, you know, fool ourselves, right? So now what do you have? Well, we don't run things as root, but you know, everybody has root privileges in your IAM profile. No, but that's, you know, I'm exaggerating, but it can be much more secure, but you can also, you know, you can also be lazy, right? What I find fascinating though is that when we, when, if you look at what you're hearing from the big clouds and even, you know, from your competitor VMware, and maybe you can add to what you're doing with the big cloud providers, the public cloud are also just becoming, you know, what we would call managed services, right? So you want a data center, well, just buy almost a little data center, you know, on Google or on AWS, create a, you know, private link or a direct, you know, direct link, you know, and they're basically pulling fiber from their zone to you. And then, you know, you're in the cloud. Well, you're not really in the cloud. You're, you know, you're running your infra over there, right?
You're paying for a very expensive data center and yeah. Or wherever. Yeah.
And that was really the thing a few years back when cloud first came out, you know, every CIO in the world said, okay, we're going to be cloud first. What does that mean? Okay, that means that everybody's going to try and get their legacy app pushed up to the cloud. They're not going to refactor it into microservices. So what you really have is a very expensive second data center. And of course, they all say, oh yeah, we'll get to that part. We'll get there. We'll refactor that later. And how many of them have pulled back now? You know, so it's an interesting problem.
Yeah. No, but go ahead, Justin.
Go ahead.
No, but there, you know, I mean, of course, there are lots of things that idiosyncrasies or you know, things like this. But you know, a recent example that, you know, I was talking with some folks that use you know, DB2, IBM DB2 database on mainframe, and you know, a very big problem that they're having is that, you know, they're coming up with new offerings for their customers, and that's generating a bunch of transactions on the mainframe, which is costing them a lot of money, right? So to avoid that explosion of cost on the mainframe, which they cannot get rid of, they need to create read-only replicas of the, you know, DB2 database, right? And you know, what's best? Well, the best is to actually replicate your DB2 in the cloud. Right, and then your new services, they are cloud services, and they hit the cloud database, right? So you know, you have some very, you know, clean, you know, definitely reasons to move to the cloud and do it properly, and you know, of course, thank God, right? But you know, the whole field is definitely fascinating. And by the way, Trigger Mesh, we help with that DB2 to cloud you know, replication.
Justin, sorry, we kept cutting you off.
That's okay. No, I wanted to ask a question just to appease Gary as well. And could you just, maybe for our listeners, define what you mean by declarative API so that there's no ambiguity. Right.
So one big shift that Kubernetes has brought to you know, to the technology landscape is really the idea that when you think about your app, you describe your app as a set of API objects. You say, hey, my app is composed of, you know, there is something running in this little container, there may be a database, and I need networking to go through here, and then maybe I need to access this other service over there, right? So you think about your app and all the different pieces that make your app, and you declare that, you define that using a set of API objects, right? And then once you've done that, you say, hey, this is my desired state, right? And you give it to Kubernetes, right? That's what we say, apply. You say, hey, Kubernetes, apply my desired state, right? So you declare the desired state of your application, and then you just let, you know, Kubernetes do its job and put everything in place, right? So it's through that, you know, all those control loops called Kubernetes controllers, right? So it's this mindset, which, you know, to me was really fascinating. And that was really, you know, something that I think Kubernetes really pushed and really, you know, evangelized, even if I can use the word, right? And I think it's really, really good. You know, what is my app? What should my app look like? Well, my app should look like this. And I have a set of APIs that help me describe that desired state, right? And then I just trust the system to, you know, you find things like this in land of infrastructure as code with Puppet and Chef and so on, right?
Yeah. So So I would, sorry to cut you off. I'm very excited about that. So I think, you know, Kubernetes is morphing though. So it was about infrastructures and, you know, apps and things like that. And now I think with things like Crossplane, you know, now you're adding like this whole, okay, let's manage other things. Let's make Kubernetes the control plane, this API control plane for everything else. You know, let's bring it up for cloud providers. Let's create, define CRDs and define templates for, you know, your whole solution sets, you know. So I feel like Kubernetes is going to morph into more of that control plane, kind of the API control plane for everything.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's why people call Kubernetes, you know, the data center control plane, or even the, you know, the cloud control plane, if you wish. So, you know, actually now we're talking. So what have we done at Trigger Mesh? We've built a set of API objects, right? So we've built a declarative API implemented by, you know, a set of Kubernetes controllers, right? And those APIs, they allow you to say, hey, you know, I have events coming from Salesforce. I need to enrich them with additional metadata, maybe filter some content, and then I need to send them to my, you know, Kafka topic, right? So this is the flow that you're trying to do. This is the event flow that you're trying to do. You use our API, then you apply it, right? And then, you know, the flow is managed declaratively,
right? That makes a lot of sense.
So you can do that for, you know, a simple event flow across multiple clouds, or you can do that for, you know, much more advanced, what we call bridge or integration, right? If you need, you know, events from SonarQube and Bitbucket and Jenkins that are going here and there. And then, you know, when this happens, you need to trigger a serverless function, and then the results need to go back in another Kafka topic. And then, you know, then you store the results for backup in Elastic, right? If you have a flow like this, that's much more complex, you can use our API to do this. And to your point, you know, Mike, what's very interesting is that Google has indeed, how do they call it? I think Google Connector. So it's a Kubernetes-like API to their cloud services. AWS has, I don't think it's CDK, but they also have a Kubernetes-like interface to their services. Azure has the same thing, right? So you're seeing more and more, you know, cloud providers offer basically an open API, you know, schema to their services. So there is some standardization happening, and it's becoming much more of a declarative, you know, mindset. And I think it's going to help everybody.
Right? I totally agree. I think that it's interesting because, you know, I always go through my cloud native deck, and in the beginning, I describe how, you know, you had these monolithic kind of applications before, and they would call APIs and they would be more local, and you would just have, like, you know, you would just come into a web server and all the different APIs would just be glued together internally. But fast forward to today, you've taken those, abstracted them out by function. They're all little microservices now, and you need a way to communicate with those microservices and the APIs. And that's really the reason for your whole application, is that, hey, we've blown up what an application is to this wider, you know, kind of construct. And now you need a way to, what we used to call glue code, to glue code it together, you know, using some kind of technology. And that's really where, you know, your solution comes into play there.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. So, you know, that's Trigger Mesh. And this, you know, very, you know, people ask about use cases. So definitely, you know, very simple, or I shouldn't say simple, but straightforward, you know, data pipeline almost, or, you know, event flow from A to B, like I mentioned, you know, Salesforce to Kafka, for example, you know, is one, you know, cloud, you know, Cisco cloud metrics going to Datadog, you know, for example, you know, that could be another one. So, you know, those are typical pipeline, but that can be implemented declaratively. And I think it's very excited, you know, versus letting developers write that stuff on their own and write the connectors on their own, write the flow on their own, letting them handle it on their own. You know, we provide that. And then there is really the full-blown event-driven application, you know, things we've done with PNC and then, you know, other folks where, you know, now you have, you know, more complex, you know, flows, multiple sources, multiple syncs, event filtering, you know, event splitting, triggering functions, you know, in the cloud, on-prem, right? But the same idea can apply where, you know, you declare that desired state and that's it.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So where do you see Trigger Mesh, you know, going? We've got KubeCon coming up here in a week or two, whatever. Where do you see, you know, Trigger Mesh in the next, say, 12 months?
Yeah, so I don't know when you're going to release this, but yeah, we're going to make a big announcement at KubeCon, so I'll, you know, stay tuned, but yeah, we're going to make a big move at KubeCon. We are very excited about it. You know, a lot more people are going to be able to consume our beautiful declarative API to build those event flows. They're going to be able to try it on their own. They're going to be able to help us, develop it, test it, and, you know, use it. So yeah, we're very excited about, you know, what's going to happen, at KubeCon and beyond. And then, you know, of course, we have, you know, partnership with Cisco here, so it's going to be exciting to see, you know, Trigger Mesh being used in IKS, and I really, you know, look forward to this over the next, you know, 3, 4, 6 months, you know, getting some events from Intersight and building some interesting event-driven application. That's going to be exciting. Technically, on the technical roadmap, we have, you know, two big things going. We have an exciting platform that's still in preview, which helps people build their own connector. And that's an exciting system where, you know, you may say, hey, I just have a container, right? And it could be written in Ruby and whatever. And then we say, oh, no problem. Give us your container and we can plug it into, you know, our entire infrastructure. And it's going to become a source, or it's going to become an event target, right? So we have this in private preview right now, which is, you know, pretty exciting. It's a very nice system that has a lot of promise. And then we are doing a lot of work on, you know, what I would call a visual editor to help people, you know, who may not want to go, you know, deep into actually writing. Writing the APIs or using our description language till we're developing a pretty powerful canvas so that you can, you know, drag and drop cloud services from multiple clouds, from, you know, IKS, and then build your EDA on your own. So yeah, it's gonna be busy times over the next, you know, 6 to 8 months. Startup life, but exciting.
Yeah, I mean, Justin and I always talk about it. We say, you know, what's, you know, with OpenAPI and all these specs that are out there now, you know, why is it that it's so hard still to just say, hey, I want to attach to this API, pull down the information. I want to attach to this API, pull down that information, do a little transformation in between, and have that go together. And I think you guys answer a lot of that, but before that it was extremely hard, you know, and it's something that it seems so logical that why isn't everybody doing that already, you know?
Yeah, so a lot of the original, you know, iPaaS vendor integration, you know, vendors, MuleSoft and Boomi and so on, they've done a lot of work in that area, and you know, we attack that same problem, but, you know, with a different mindset, a much more, you know, cloud first mindset, and I think it changes, you know, things, and it changes, yeah, the approach, right? So, you know, for us, it's API first, you know, what's the schema, a schema registry, event type registry, and then, you know, transforming everything, you know, declaratively. And I think it's, you know, it's going to be a big boost for folks, you know, in the coming 6 months to a year.
And just one more question, then I'll get to Justin.
Unbelievable.
Why does everybody have such a hard time writing an open API spec? Why is it always so bad? You know, like, it's, you never get like a great API spec.
You should ask, you know, some of the developers on our team. They are really, really good at it, and much better, you know, than me. You know, right now I spend most of my time, you know, in meetings and doing presentations and so on. But we have folks that are extremely good at it.
That's awesome.
Our Kubernetes controllers are, you know, very top quality, and our CRDs are amazing. We did something very nice lately, is that as we are preparing for, you know, an announcement at KubeCon, we went through all our Kubernetes, you know, resource definitions, and we added description to every field in the, you know, in the CRDs, so that when you do kubectl explain, for example, kubectl explain Salesforce source, or kubectl explain AWS SQS source, you get the documentation right there, and that comes straight up from the CRD. Right?
Thank you.
But so I think it's a very nice touch.
That's awesome. So, Sebastian, just a couple minutes left here. Where can people go to get more info about you or TriggerMesh or any other exciting things that you want to point them to?
TriggerMesh.com for sure, and then github.com/TriggerMesh, right? Our GitHub organization, and as hinted, there's going to be some very interesting movement going on in github.com/TriggerMesh, and then Twitter @TriggerMesh.
And you guys, you have a booth at KubeCon?
Yeah, we have a booth. I cannot go because, you know, still close to Europeans, the border. But yeah, we have a booth. So Mark Inkle, the CEO, our CEO is gonna be there. You know, Gary Mick and Greg Wallace. You know, so we have a team there. So go to the booth, and you know, some of us in other parts of the world, we're gonna be joining virtually. So we'll be there.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for being on here. You know, it's been great conversation.
Thank you, folks. Yeah, that was great.